Once again, here's Rick Preuss and Lee Cohen, who are keenly aware that dogs have owners and cats have staff. This is the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.
It's 11:35, and we're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we have with us as a guest on the line, a returning guest, Dr. Carrie Lewis from the Riverside Cat Hospital in Okemos. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Lewis.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you back on the show. Dr. Lewis, we're talking a little bit about Bengal cats. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with them?
Bengal cats are great pets. You do need to be aware, if you're considering getting a Bengal cat, that they have lots of energy. They're very interactive with people and other pets in the household. And so you want to make sure, if you're thinking about getting a Bengal, that you've got the time to invest to work with training and activities, and make sure you've got lots of new kinds of toys available. But they're really wonderful cats to have.
Kind of reminds me of different dog breeds, and you know that Scotty breed is going to have a different owner than something like Australian Shepherd.
Yeah, I would equate the Bengal more with the Australian Shepherd in terms of the energy input required by the family.
Okay, but Dr. Lewis, now you hit a magic word that I know Rick Preuss has been talking with me about now for over a year. He's been talking about how come there isn't a trainer for cats. And I just heard you say you need to train these cats. So let's talk about that. How do you go about training these cats?
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know that most cats can be trained, and the more active, the higher energy the cat, I think the more trainable they are, because they're really interested in interacting with you and people in your family. So you train a cat much the same way that you train a dog. It just takes a little more intuition on your part. You find something that the cat really enjoys, a special treat, a special food, a special toy. And you reward the cat with that treat or other type of reward every single time he or she does the behavior that you're looking for. And it's best to start with something very simple, training the cat to sit before it gets a treat or a reward, training the cat to sit before it gets its food, you know, in the morning or the evening. And you just work up from there. Once the cat has that particular trick down, then you can train them to do more complex things, like even, you know, shake, like you see dogs do. You can do that with cats, too. And cats that have high energy, cats that, you know, demand a lot of your attention, training them simple tricks like that is a good way to teach them, you know, who's in charge in the household and to get the kinds of good behaviors that you want out of the relationship rather than destructive behaviors.
And someone listening to that, that has as much implication for them, because that takes time. You need to interact. It's not the kind of cat for you if you're not interested in engaging yourself with them, correct?
That's right. If you just want a cat that, you know, might just sit on your lap in the evening and you can pet and, you know, just minimal interaction, but it's a nice furry pet in the house, then you might want to just get an older, more sedate cat. Yeah. But Bengals, even when they're, you know, fully adult, they tend to be very active, and so they're good for households with maybe children who are old enough to learn how to train the cat, or
sure,
people that have time. You know, this isn't the type of cat for a professional who is working 12 hours a day. The
yep.
person needs to be home at least a few hours of the day to invest some time with the cat.
It's a passion in and of itself.
That's right.
When people come in with the Bengal cats, I assume you've seen a few Bengals in your practice.
Yes. Yeah, and Bengals are beautiful cats, and people are attracted to them because of their beautiful hair coats. They're very soft, silky, short hair, you know, not a lot of fur to deal with, and they've got beautiful spots.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to be prepared for the temperament that comes with the beautiful coloring.
Does the world change a little bit in the practice when one of these come in? Does everything kind of stop? And
well, kind of, because we all want to see the cat. but no, they're very nice cats to work with. It's pretty unusual in my experience to see a Bengal cat that, you know, is fearful or aggressive at the clinic, like some cats can be.
Okay.
They tend to be very friendly and outgoing. They're not the shy cat that's going to sit back in the corner. They're right up to greet you and say hello, even if you're a stranger. So they're very nice cats to work with here in the clinic.
They are probably one of the more misunderstood breeds that you're going to actually have in your practice, I would assume.
I think so. But once people get them and understand, you know, what they've got, usually just a small investment of time, you know, the time that the cat needs to interact with you, and you've got a great pet.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
We're talking this morning with Dr. Carrie Lewis from the Riverside Cat Hospital. Dr. Lewis, when these cats come in, I've heard that there are certain things that because they're descended from wild cats, that, for example, there's no rabies shots that you can give them and other things like that. Can you talk a little bit about the mythology related to these cats?
Yeah, there is some mythology, as you say, and that is common with many different pure breeds of both cats and dogs. With Bengals in particular, you mentioned the concern about rabies vaccine. There's no medical basis to that concern. Bengals can and should be vaccinated against rabies and all of the other common cat diseases that we vaccinate for. There's no reason that they shouldn't be able to receive those vaccines. Every cat and dog out there, you know, there's always a small risk of vaccine reaction, but we certainly do what we can to minimize those risks, and they're no greater with Bengals than they are with your average domestic short hair or any other breed of cat. So I would strongly recommend to anybody that has a Bengal that hasn't had him or her vaccinated because of that concern to discuss it with your veterinarian, because there's really no reason not to get that important protection.
And as far as the type of reasons they would come in there, do you get a little higher percentage of injury or anything like that because they are such an active cat?
No, you know, they tend to be pretty resilient. They are very active. They do lots of jumping around. It's not uncommon to hear about them, you know, perching and jumping from the top of the refrigerator or high pieces of furniture. But, you know, on the other hand, they don't seem to have any higher proportion of injuries from that sort of activity. I don't know if they're just very graceful like cats tend to be, or,
sure,
you know, maybe their bones are a little more flexible. But fortunately, there doesn't seem to be as, you know, any problem with increased rate of injury.
And the fact that they're, what, four generations removed from the leopard cat being a cross, does that present any interesting veterinary perspective?
No, at this point in time, they're pretty well domesticated. They don't have much trace of the wild animal left except for the beautiful coloring.
Right.
Really, as far as medical care goes, they're no different from any other normal American household cat. They're very nice pets. People just need to be aware that their temperaments are quite active and quite energetic, and that's really the main thing with this breed.
Dr. Lewis, with regard to that active temperament, one of the things I've observed with very active dogs is very active dogs like to eat an awful lot and require a certain level of quality in their food in order to expend that energy. Is the same thing true with these cats? How does their diet get affected by the fact that they probably burn off a lot more calories than the average couch potato cat that many people have?
That's a good point, yeah. It's pretty common to see overweight cats in our practice. It's probably the number one health concern that I discuss with people at their visits. But with Bengals, it's much less common to see overweight cats. They tend to be very long and slender. That's not saying I haven't seen overweight Bengals, but it's much less common. So apparently, you know, I don't necessarily believe that Bengal owners feed their cats a whole lot differently, although somebody who's invested in a Bengal,
yeah,
is probably a little more likely to go the extra step and get the super high-quality food, make sure that they do their research about feeding. But I don't see as many problems with obesity with Bengals as I would with, you know, as you said, more couch potato-y kind of cats.
But
so I think the increased activity does help.
But from a nutritional perspective, would it be helpful to have an even higher protein content, or would that not be all that important?
Higher protein would be an excellent idea. Lower carbohydrate, lower fiber, higher protein and fat kind of diet, almost along the lines of a kitten food.
Sure.
Would be very appropriate for that type of cat.
And it's a side note, but somebody's listening, and I'm sure. Give us the canned versus dry food opinion from a veterinarian's perspective. I've heard both sides of the story as to why canned food can be very good for a cat, and other situations where, no, their teeth need to have hard kibbles.
Well, the canned food, and you had made the point about higher protein levels. Canned food, as a general trend, does tend to be higher in protein and mm-hmm. fat and water content, obviously, than dry foods do. And for most cats, you know, cats are obligate carnivores. They developed to be able to process meat, not really grains. And so most cats do, I believe, do better on a high-protein, low-carbohydrate kind of diet. And for most cats, that equates to a canned diet. Now, as long as proper attention is paid to the teeth in terms of what you can do at home for home care, maybe feeding some dental treats, there really shouldn't be a higher proportion of dental problems in cats that eat canned food versus dry.
Okay. Okay. And another thing that comes up with this breed is they have a great fascination for water. Is that at all considering for veterinary care? Is there anything that you want to think about in that respect?
That's a good point. I think, you know, we've all seen videos on the internet of cats drinking out of the sinks or sticking their heads under the faucet. And to be honest, I think Bengals may just be, you know, they get bored and they're amused by watching water tumble out of a faucet or they splash it in their bowl. So I think part of that may just be their very curious intellect.
Yeah.
But certainly if a cat wants to drink more water, I would be the last person to discourage them. I think one of the best things we can do for our cats health-wise is to encourage extra water consumption. And that's one of the benefits that comes with canned foods. But drinking fountains for your cats are a great way to introduce them to extra water. And, you know, like I said with the Bengals, that a drinking fountain may also prove to be an extra source of amusement for your cat.
Yeah, and there's a lot of those variety of things out there on the market now. I know we have a couple different varieties of, like, water tumbling devices for cats, and that's kind of a neat new concept that you didn't see 10 years ago, really, to speak of.
That's right, and I would highly encourage anybody that, you know, if your veterinarian has told you that your cat needs to have more water for whatever reason, mm-hmm. the drinking fountain is a good first step.
Dr. Lewis, as a last question for you, and I know this sounds ridiculous, but as these cats need something to use up their energy, is it wrong for people to take their cats for a walk?
I think that's a great activity for cats and their people to do together. I always encourage people with new kittens to consider getting them trained on a harness. Leashes and collars are not necessarily a good idea for cats, but a harness hooked up to a leash is perfectly suitable. And get your cat used to wearing one and, you know, take him outside in a low traffic area where he can sniff the grass, you know, maybe roll in the flower beds a little bit. I think that's a wonderful idea.
Fantastic. We've been talking this morning with Dr. Carrie Lewis, the owner of the Riverside Cat Hospital in Okemos. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Dr. Lewis. We really appreciate your information.
Thank you.
Oh, it's been our pleasure. And Rick, we're going to continue the conversation with a Bengal rescue right after the break here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.